You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges. I'm pleased today to be joined by Dr. Angela Jackson of New Profit. She's one of the managing partners. Angela, thank you so much for being with us.
Ramona, thank you for having us, especially on this exciting day where we're finally announcing the 15 solutions for the Future Work Grand Challenge.
I am so glad we could talk about this today because we've talked about this in the past as you were taking in the applications for this. So for those in the audience who don't know what the Grand Challenge is, why don't you tell us kind of broadly what it is, and then we could talk about who some of the people have been selected.
So the Future Work Grand Challenge is partnered by New Profit in partnership with XPRIZE Foundation, MIT Solves, and JFF. And what we're doing is we're giving finalists access to $6 million in funding to implement solutions that will rapidly reskill 25,000 workers into higher wage jobs and to equip influential workforce boards with vetted tools to help get Americans back to work. And why this is so important is that many times philanthropy, we actually give grants based on ideas. These grants are going to be given based on outcomes. So it's really going to be down to how many people were trained and how many people were placed in jobs with living wages.
What were you looking for as you were looking for the organizations, the groups to go forward in this competition?
So even before COVID, we had been working on this initiative for 2 years. And really what we centered it around were working adults, busy people who are in need of upskilling, but who can't take the opportunity cost to take off a year or go back to get a four-year degree. So we know going into this that we were looking for accelerated learning programs and also programs that would allow a learner or a worker to earn while they learn. We know that, you know, people, we think a lot about the 56 million U.S. residents who are working, you know, minimum wage jobs, you know, less than living wage jobs, that they need opportunities to skill up in a fashion that works for their complex and busy lives. And so we really wanted these entrepreneurs to be willing to center the experience of these learners, right? And to create solutions that will work alongside their busy lives.
We talk a lot about trying to upskill for jobs now, actually, and jobs of the future. Are each of the programs that are in your rapid reskilling, are they earn as you learn?
Absolutely. And the way that we're thinking about it, there's two things. One is, like you said, Ramona, the future of work has become the present of work, right? So a lot of things that we thought were going to happen happened in COVID. You know, industries went away that we thought were recession proof. And so what we've tried to do with all of these trainings is that one is they're offered free of charge to the job seekers. And we're asking the entrepreneurs to train for jobs that will not be impacted in the future of work. So thinking in the next 3 to 5 years, and opportunities where people can leave this short-term training and actually get a job with a living wage. And so those are the parameters that we looked at. And we wanted to make sure that these trainings were geared towards people who don't have a bachelor's degree and have other barriers to employment.
There are 15 different organizations that will be part of the solution.
They're a combination of Rapid Reskilling and MIT Solves. And so we're looking at the 15 solutions as a cohort that we're validating at workforce boards. They just came to us from different challenges. There's a couple that I'm just really excited about. The first is this company that's called Charger Help. And what's so interesting about that one is that they are training people to be technicians and to service electric car charging stations. What's so interesting to me about that idea is, one is, who knew that that was a job? You know, I didn't. And two, who knew that you could do that type of job and not have a bachelor's degree? So in a 16-week program, they're able to train someone to do this job. And they can go and make upwards of $150 an hour. But the company itself, Charger Help, actually pays their employees up to $50 an hour. But they're giving them this training that has, you know, a great market potential. And so that's one example. Another example that we're really excited about is Generations USA. They're a national nonprofit, and they're actually international in many ways, but they're allowing people to on the job while they're like learning a new trade. And they do, you know, everything from building trades to manufacturing to data to technology. While they're getting the technical training, they're also giving them the wraparound supports of that professional training and what some might call soft skills, but are, you know, really important professional skills if you're going to actually obtain a job. They're getting paid while they do it. They're attuning to like the wraparound supports a worker might need. So in terms of transportation and childcare, and they are promised a job on the other end of it. And so as a learner, when you're thinking about that opportunity cost of taking, you know, 16 weeks or 3 months off to learn, you're getting some upside in the beginning. And also you've got this guarantee on the back end.
I also see, Angela, that The Last Mile is one of the nonprofits that you're also funding through this. That's an organization that Working Nation is very familiar with. We've actually done stories on it.
Yeah, absolutely. What we love about Last Mile is that they're taking a look at technology and coding from an equity lens. So the fact that they are working with people who are currently incarcerated to teach them this new skill that could have value on the open marketplace when these people who are incarcerated leave the system, that's doing two things. One is it's allowing a person to really re-enter society as a contributing member. The second thing that they're helping to do is reducing the rate of recidivism, which is really important to us as a country. And it shows that if a person who has been incarcerated is able to actually find meaningful employment, that they're less likely by multiples to commit another crime. And we know that many people who are getting out of the juvenile and the justice system, et cetera, that they have not been exposed to technology, that they've had limited access to computers. And so when we talk about the future of work, if they've been incarcerated for 5 or even 10 years, they need to have information about what opportunities exist for them and opportunities to actually train for them.
A lot of the organizations that you have chosen, they're jobs of the future. They're growing fields like Charger Help, which sounds like a fantastic forward-looking program. I also noticed there's an Arts to Work here. What kind of program is that?
Well, Arts to Work is interesting because what they are doing is allowing people to think about how they can make art. If they have a passion for art, how they can make a living doing it. And if you look at a lot of training programs, you'll hear a lot of coding boot camps, or you may hear about apprenticeships in the manufacturing trades. But when we think about the 53 million Americans who are not earning a living wage, that means that everyone's not going to be, you know, interested in coding. Everyone might not want an apprenticeship for a building trade. And so how do we really honor job seekers and their diverse interests? And knowing that art truly is a pathway, but again, maybe these job seekers for a variety of reasons may have not known that that was open to them. And so what we tried to do when we were picking these 15 solutions was to think about the wide swath and diversity among job seekers and having different proof of concepts where people can work in different sectors and maybe some that they never thought about to earn a living wage.
I also noticed that there are a couple of the finalists qualified teams that are from out of the country, from India, from Australia, Ireland. What kind of programs are these and what are you hoping to achieve by picking them?
One of the first programs that is based here in the U.S., Generations USA, that's on our list, it actually started in South Africa, and it was a program called Harambe, and it was replicated here in the States. And so there are a lot of people around the world who are really trying to solve for the similar problem that we're solving for here in the States. How do you train people who are experiencing low wages at scale for opportunities for them to earn a more living wage, a more, you know, life-sustaining wage? And so in opening this challenge up to a global audience and saying, we want ideas from around the world, your best thinking, but we're going to make sure that you actually validate it in the U.S. context, we didn't want to put any boundaries on where that good idea could come from. And so what we've seen is that in some of the emerging markets, that you're seeing more ingenuity around the trainings themselves, you also see more ecosystem plays, right? Because unfortunately, our workforce system here in the US is in need of some modernization. And so you have other countries like New Zealand who are thinking about workforce development and apprenticeship in very different ways. Thus, they've created models based on those systems that are already working at scale that could easily be translated to the US context.
So how do you connect those 15 solutions to the people who need the training and the work?
So a couple of things. One is that we did a sort of a dating and matchmaking with the solution teams and the workforce boards. We had representatives from boards who helped us actually select these 15, and we had workers who were on the judging panel that helped us select these 15 in general. What we did from there is that working with IBM, we did a design matchmaking process by which the entrepreneurs and the boards got to meet each other to have a deeper understanding of, one, the solutions and also just the local context, which is important. And then the boards were able to rank which ones they thought would have the most relevance for their particular communities. And we're really excited about this process because it wasn't one where we were like, okay, you know, Hartford, Connecticut, these are the two solutions that you're given. It was one by which the boards were able to say, for example, my charger help, we have, you know, a growing market right here with electric cars. This is something from the government, federal and state, that's a priority to get more electric vehicles on the road, which means that we're going to need more technicians to do that. And so that's how we're able to pair them to say, okay, what is the need in that local community? And what is the solution out there that's solving for that need?
Part of your solutions here are these piloted workforce boards that you're talking about, correct?
That's exactly it.
And where are those located?
We did this, and Ramona, you'll probably appreciate this. When we created this challenge, we wanted to build a proof of concept that you can create accelerated learning programs centered on worker voice and the needs of workers. Like I mentioned, the need for them to earn and learn and to do kind of short burst programs. And so what we did in that with these boards is we also had an understanding that each market might be different. So we wanted to select six very different communities so that we can actually show how this accelerated learning program and approach could work among diverse regions. So we selected Hartford, Connecticut, Worcester, Massachusetts, Hampton Roads, Virginia, West Michigan, Dallas, Texas, and San Diego, California. And so what we wanted to show through having a diverse context and boards was what solutions work for which job seekers under which context. And so what works in an urban environment versus more of a suburban, which works better for more of like the middle of the United States versus the coast.
That is true. Everything is local. We always talk about the solutions are local. The needs of an employer are local. The training is local. So I think that is a fantastic wide swath of the country that you're looking at right there.
Ramona, I'd also share, we had a great partner in MC that gave us real-time data analytics. So when we knew those six communities, we could also look at, you know, who was actually hiring today in Hartford, Connecticut. What are the sectors and which are the job listings today that don't require a bachelor's degree, but are for positions that are what we call future proof that aren't estimated to be automated in the next 3 to 5 years? So we're able to give that information to the entrepreneurs and innovators too, so they could really think deeply about how their solution could really be a fit in these particular communities.
What is the next step for these solutions? Is there a time frame that you're working with them in?
Absolutely. So we're going to start the validation period at the beginning of April. And then over the next 6 months, each solution will be tasked with identifying 500 job seekers that they can train and place in these living wage jobs. And we put some barriers around it. We know that there's a lot of people who are unemployed in this moment, but we really wanted to center our efforts, this philanthropic efforts, on the people who have the most barriers to employment. So the other parameter that we put in is that the job seeker couldn't have made a living wage last year. And two, that they need to have other barriers to employment and that they don't have a bachelor's degree. Because it's our fundamental belief that if we can solve the equation for this group, that it will benefit everyone, right? Whether you have a degree or not.
What is the success? They're going to identify 500 people. Are they going to train them in over the course of that same period?
Yep. So the goal is that once they've identified the 500 who are interested in their training, they will do the training. And that training needs to happen over 120 days. And then there will be another 120 days where they will get the wraparound supports and look at job placement.
At the end of that 240 days, what do you envision? What would you like the next step to be?
So after that first phase, we'll go into this exponential. So if we can prove that we've done it for 500, the next step is saying, can we do that for 5,000? Can we do that in a separate sector, right? So if they're just doing training in one sector, how can they expand their offering to show proof of concept that they can do this accelerated training in several different sectors? And then really our North Star is around policy change and recommendations. I think we all can agree that, you know, our workforce system is not working for the people who are at the margins. And so what we hope to offer from this challenge and what I like to say this experiment is some practical recommendations, not only to the 538 plus workforce boards that are out there in terms of a playbook on how they can metabolize technology and innovation, but also thinking about our federal government and state government when they're looking at the reauthorization of WIOA and different workforce policies, that we can share what we learned, right, based on this experiment that was really laser focused, not only about training, but also attuning to placement in good jobs with living wages.
You sound very optimistic. Are you optimistic that we can make these changes?
I am very optimistic. And I'll tell you, if we can't make these changes in this moment, when we have historic unemployment rates, when the system has been exposed in terms of who's essential workers and who's not, and who's earning a living wage and who's not, who's capable of having the luxury to shelter at home and who's not able to afford it, then I say, when else could we do this? And I think there's a forcing mechanism because of that. You've got the appetite and you've got the willingness. And I've been really encouraged just by the group of partners that we've assembled. You know, we're excited to have Working Nation as a partner. We're excited that, you know, Strata Education Network, Walmart.org are our lead investors. But we've got a dozen other investors who've come together and put aside their individual agendas to think about how can we work collectively to incentivize this type of accelerated learning that is centered on the people who are most marginalized and make it an outcomes-based challenge. So it's not good enough to train someone. I tell people that all day. No one goes to a training program just to be trained. You know, the job seekers that we talk to, they're going to that training program so that they can get a job and hopefully a job with higher wages. And so we need to learn as a system how we deliver on that promise. And what makes me excited is that with this ecosystem effort, with, you know, workforce boards, that's government entities, with innovators, entrepreneurs, and then private sector investors, that having those people at the seat of the table, like, again, if we can't solve it, who else could? And I think whether we succeed or fail, there's going to be a lot of learnings along the way. And we've been committed to being transparent about those, about what works and what doesn't work. We have Brandeis University as a research partner. And so we want to share what we've learned along the way. And that's why this conversation is so important, because we're putting a stick in the ground and we're sharing what our goals are. And then I look forward to coming back, right, in 6 months and saying, okay, how did that work? What did we learn? Where did we fail? Where did we miss the mark? What would we do differently? Because that's where the richness comes in and being very transparent about this process, even more than the outcomes, the process, because we want other boards and communities to adopt this process. So that means that we're going to have to let people in on the inside baseball and bring them along.
Well, Working Nation is proud to be a partner with this effort as well. We think the mission is critical. As you said, if we don't do it now, when are we going to do it? So Angela, thank you so much for leading the effort, and thank you for being here today.
Ramona, thank you.
I've been speaking with Dr. Angela Jackson, New Profit Managing Partner. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Thank you for listening.